This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This opening half hour is brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory. With the Sunbury Motors guarantee and a terrific service department that backs it up every step of the way, routine to difficult, it is all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Always a pleasure to be joined by a guy that I think defines a pro's pro, and that is Rich Scarcella, Reading Eagle. Rich, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Great to be with you, Steve, as always.
Let's start with Saturday night, 21-7. What stuck out to you about that game on Saturday night?
Well, a couple things. One, let's start with the line play. Both sides of the ball, I thought, was exceptional for Penn State. And, we just finished the press conference, weekly press conference with James Franklin, and that's what I asked him about, the offensive line. And I think the offensive line has played better than anybody expected. James Franklin singled out Nick Dawkins. Yeah. That was going to happen once.
Yeah.
Nick Dawkins, for how well he's played at center. I think the defensive line, people sometimes overlook the interior of the defensive line. Zane Durant, Devon J. Thomas, Keziah Izzard, Hakeem Beamon, down the list. I'm missing a few, but the bottom line is they played really well Saturday night against a team that prides itself on being very physical. So that's where I would start. And then, as I wrote for a column for today's print edition, the physicality of running backs Nick Singleton and Catron Allen is something to behold. Both of them welcome contact. Sometimes they don't avoid it, they welcome it. And what Nick Singleton did on that 3rd-and-7 play, when he pancaked the defensive end, then caught a pass from Drew Aller and ran over a defensive back to get the first down, was something that I'll remember for a long time.
That was, you need to play guys that play winning football, and that's a winning football play by Singleton that sets the tone, I think, for an entire sideline when you see somebody like that do that.
No question about it. Drew Aller said the same thing about the two of them, Nick and Catron, about how it impacts the rest of the offense. And I don't think there's any question about that. The two of them are all about gaining every inch that they can, and they don't care who's in their way. If you're going to try to tackle me, I'm going to try to run you over. And you see it all the time with these guys. I mean, I know more about Nick's background than Catron's, but I could say this. Nick trains at a facility here in Berks County. He's trained there since he was in middle school, and those people continue to rave about him in the weight room, and you've seen it at Penn State as well. Just one of the strongest guys, pound for pound, I think, in college football.
And I think what they've done here is the model that a lot of people want to have. Yeah, it's organic, but when the game is over, or even when the season's over, the number of touches each one has is so close that it's keeping the wear and tear as much as possible off their bodies.
that, and I don't think that is an accident whatsoever that their carries are that close. I think it's also to keep both of them happy. I do. I think, and that's fine. You know, because they're two terrific running backs, and one shouldn't be slighted over the other. But it does. They're never worn out at the end of games, and if you split the carries evenly, they're both pretty happy guys. So, I agree with that.
Any quarterback will tell you that the last thing they want is pressure up the middle and in their face. What have you seen in the progress of Zane Durant at that defensive tackle spot that's allowed him to play that way?
Well, it's just quickness. I mean, he's not the biggest defensive tackle in college football by far. To say that standing in front of him after the game at 6'1", 286 pounds, it's something to say, but he's not. But his quickness is something that is exceptional. You and I watched him and know how good he's been, you know, since he was a freshman. You could see it, and it's just he's getting better and better and better. And you saw that Saturday night, that there were times he just exploded past the center or the guard or both to get into the backfield. And then when Tom Allen puts Abdul Carter in that middle of the line, you know, in passing situations, then it's like pick your poison. Who do you want to block? Abdul Carter or Zane Durant? And sometimes Illinois couldn't do either.
What was your thoughts on the play of Drew Aller in the game?
I don't think he was as sharp as he was against Kent State. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I think he played well. He didn't make any mistakes. I think there was a stretch there that I can't remember when it was, but when he missed Khalil Dinkins on the seam route, and then he missed Trey Wallace to the sideline. You know, he threw it harder. He didn't put any air under either pass. But overall, I thought he played solid. He had a solid game, and I wouldn't be surprised if he has a big game on Saturday against the very vulnerable UCLA pass defense.
Right. Illinois scored in the opening drive of the game. Then after that, the yardage was minimal. For them. They did have a 34-yard run. They had a 36-yard, flip play to McCray. They missed a field goal. But that was it. It was a low-possession game. Only 8 possessions for Illinois in the game. What was your thoughts on the adjustments that Penn State made defensively after the opening drive?
Well, I think, and it's, James Franklin mentioned it after the game. The turning point of the game was Illinois has first and goal to 2 late in the second quarter.
Right.
And because of the defense and because of the student section, the noise from the student section, Illinois doesn't go forward. They go backwards and 20-some yards, 25 yards or whatever it was, and misses a 45-yard field goal. And to me, that just turned everything around. And then Penn State scores to go ahead in the third quarter, and honestly, I mean, Illinois never crossed midfield until the last minute in the second half, until the last minute of the game. Sometimes after watching hundreds of games, I kind of pick up little things, and Illinois, as
me
you
too.
You know, Steve, they want it to be a one score game. In the fourth quarter, they want to play field position. They have a plan offensively and defensively. Well, once it got to 21-7, they had to throw that out the window, and that's where Penn State started just hammering Luke Altmyer and rushing him. I think where they have 4 sacks in the fourth quarter, so you saw a change. But honestly, it was the stopping the run defensively, making Illinois one-armed, if you will, that changed everything. And really, I never thought after that first and goal from the 2 disintegrated, I never thought Illinois was going to score.
Right, but that's why in the fourth quarter on the broadcast, I just said, look, I said, let's be honest here. Penn State gets one more score of any kind.
Right.
I said, Illinois, there are not enough possessions left in the game for them to send it to overtime. I mean, you just could tell that there's just, because, you know, possessions, the number of possessions are not talked about enough. And you could just tell with the clock and the way the game was playing, they didn't have enough possessions to do anything with it. Which then
And they weren't getting any push at all.
No.
Like, to run the ball. They couldn't run the ball whatsoever. I hate to sound like this, but scores are often deceiving. And I'm not putting this on one young man, but if Xander Zahedak makes 240-yard field goals, and then Penn State also went for it on fourth down instead of trying, I forget what the yards would have been on the field goal. So let's say those three field goals are made. It's 30-7, and you're like, oh, that's about right. They dominated the game after the first possession. Yeah, that's about right. So like I saw people figuratively gnashing their teeth on social media after the game, and I'm like, well, they won by two touchdowns, and Illinois was undefeated and was ranked, and I'll bet you they're going to win 8 or 9 games this year. And can Penn State be better? Oh yeah, they can be better with the field goal kicking, and they can also be better with the penalties, as James said about an hour ago. They've got to be better with the penalties.
Well, here's where the gnashing of teeth comes in. Okay? Whatever the spread was, 17, 19, whatever it was, you make the two field goals, it's 20. Okay.
Right.
All right. So I understand where the gnashing of teeth comes from, because this is something I've talked about the last couple of years.
Yep.
You're going to get more and more complaints because of how the spread played out as opposed to how the game played out, because your own personal money is on the line.
Right.
That aside, when it does, look, we all see what the impact of field goal kicking is in the NFL. It's a huge part of the offense. You don't even have to get to the red zone to get points.
By the way, saw it yesterday as a Packers fan.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So now you get to this point. One thing about a month into the season, it's a decision you didn't want to have to make. But how interesting moving forward is this decision that will impact whomever is doing the kicking, and if it's not Sander, how it might impact him?
Yeah, I mean it's tough. You're four games into the season, and you've got there's no break right now. You have two games, and UCLA is really struggling. I mean, let's be honest. And they've got to play a 9 a.m. Pacific time game Saturday at In-State College. But the fact is, somebody needs to step up, whoever that may be, even if it's Xander. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen this week.
But
somebody's got to step up in the kicking game, because then you play at USC, then you play at Wisconsin, then you play Ohio State at home. Those three games, you're going to need a accurate kicker.
Yeah. And we'll find out how it plays out. That's the only thing anybody can do. James has touted Tyler Warren, and he has shown a lot in the first four games. What are your thoughts on his impact to the offense as a tight end, H-back, and basically all-around good guy?
Yeah, I mean, he is. And he's really... He's almost, when he takes the direct snap, he's almost taking Bo Prabula's role.
Yep.
In a way. And but he's been very effective. And, the blocking, too. I mean, that's the one thing, you see it. I'm sure Jack sees it, obviously. Yep. But the blocking, he's a terrific blocker. And I think the whole tight end group, right now with him, Khalil Dinkins, and Luke Reynolds, I think they've done a really good job blocking, in addition to the offensive line. Tyler Warren's a really terrific player, and I would think he's got the best chance of any of the Penn State players right now, again, 8 games left in the season, to win a national award. I think he's got the best chance.
It's interesting. People always bring up the flow of the offense because suddenly Bo comes in the game or suddenly Tyler Warren comes in the game. And this, you know, we can ask questions, but like, this will be a conversation piece for Rich and I right here. Penn State practices this way all the time, so that actually is the natural flow because they don't just like, okay, let's practice the packages now. They actually like, okay, work it in here, work it in there. So it's actually, they're used to what it is because of practice. It's not just they do it in the game.
Yeah, no, I understand that. It's not something foreign to them. I don't know how people stand on this. I don't like wasting a position. And what you're doing with wasting a position when you bring Bo in, you split your Aller out.
Right.
And, I mean, come on. He's not catching a pass. I mean, they tried it once, and in the Peach Bowl, it didn't really work. And I don't like that. Maybe I'm a football purist. I don't like that in general. It's nothing to do with Penn State. I just like, hey, who's your quarterback? Okay, I want him on the field in his position. That's me. That doesn't mean you could bring, if you want to bring Bo in and then take Drew out for a play, sure. Okay. I could see that. You know, but I don't like, you know, I didn't like it with, you know, when Penn State did it with Trace McSorley and with Sean Clifford either. I guess I'm a football purist.
All right, so now this will be the first time that we get into a game with where now Penn State gets to see the new league because three of the next five are against the new part of the league. UCLA, USC,
right.
And then Washington after Wisconsin and Ohio State. How interested are you to see how those four teams out west react to all the travel they have to go through?
Well, yeah, I mean UCLA, I don't know if we've talked about it on your show. UCLA is traveling the most miles of anybody in the country this year. They've already been to Hawaii and Louisiana to play LSU.
Yep.
They're coming to Penn State this week, and then 2 weeks later they're coming to Rutgers.
Yep.
I mean, schedule maker didn't do the Bruins any favors. I think it's interesting. USC hasn't played yet on the East Coast, but they played at Michigan. And we'll see what happens when Penn State goes out to USC. You know this, and James just mentioned it publicly for the first time, that Penn State is leaving next Thursday for Los Angeles. And
right.
I guarantee you, did a very thorough research on that, talked to NFL teams, college teams, go down the list. So they're leaving Thursday. I'm interested to see how that works out. And, you know, next year Penn State plays UCLA in the Rose Bowl stadium. And, you know, it's going to be interesting, but I think by the time UCLA gets done with its next three games at Penn State, I forget who they have home next week, and then at Rutgers, those guys are going to be weary.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. You know, you can't do it based on this season, but I want to see after 3 years or so, what does it look like for them? In terms of the back and forth, what kind of wear and tear there happens to be. Because I know when it comes to teams going west, 14 of them have to go west. And of the 14, 8 have bye weeks, including Penn State the next week. The other 6 have home games. So that part was figured in. I don't know what was figured in for the 4 out west.
Yeah. So UCLA plays at Penn State, Minnesota home, at Rutgers, bye, at Nebraska, home against Iowa, at Washington, and then finishes with 2 home games. So, yeah, it's going to be fascinating. USC has to go to Minnesota this week, Maryland in 2 weeks, then Washington in another 2 weeks, then they're basically home the rest of the season. So, yeah, I think I think, doesn't Oregon play at Michigan, or am I getting that wrong?
I know Oregon has to host Ohio State. That's next week. Then after that, I'm not sure.
Oregon's at Michigan on November 2nd, the same day of the Ohio State-Penn State game. So, wait till I'm curious. You're talking about football.
Yeah.
How about basketball?
Basketball, okay. They're all going to be two. When they comes out, right. I'm sure it's all two game road trips for those guys.
Yeah.
That way, it's five.
Right.
So I know Oregon and Washington and both have to come here. I just didn't look and see the sequencing on them as to who they're playing besides Penn State. Penn State going out there, they're going to play on a Saturday at Pauley, and they're going to play on a Tuesday at the Galen Center.
Yeah.
Penn State's going to go out there on a Friday. They're going to be there for four nights, essentially.
The Saturday Tuesday surprised me because in the Pac-12, they played Thursday Saturday or Friday Sunday.
And that's what I thought was going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
But evidently, somebody on TV came up with a different idea.
Yeah, obviously. So Oregon is at Purdue, at Michigan, at Wisconsin, the rest of the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
My friend, it is always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your valuable time.
Steve, thank you. I appreciate it.
He's one of the best. Rich Scarsella, Reading Eagle. It's brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key, Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.